As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show today. International potpourri special with Euro 24 qualifiers. Are Georgia heading to Germany? And will Wales meet their end when they face the Finnish? Friendlies. Can England leave Vinny Jr.'s Brazil red-faced like they were Alan Brazil? There's this week's points deduction fun in the Premier League. And there's test your international manager identifying skills against our panel. All of that and more in this Totally Football Show. Thursday, 21st of March. Hi, listener. Today on the Totally Football Show, we have for you some Duncan Alexander. Hello, Duncan.
Hello, James.
Jack Lang's back with us. All right, Jack.
James, hello.
And on the big screen and live and direct from the land of plain speaking, Rory Smith.
Hello, how are you doing?
All right. Where is your comfortably appointed study located, Rory?
I am on the border of Western North Yorkshire.
Woof. Are there ridings involved?
Disputed territory. Oh, there's so many ridings. I can't move for ridings.
Woof. Yeah. Love some of that. How's your international break going?
Quite quiet. It's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is quiet. And that's, in many ways, the attraction of it. A little bit of peace. Seeing some signs of the kind of careful rationing of content, you know, creeping in. But some gems amongst all that. Jack, I enjoyed your poetic pen to the... if I may, Portuguese Pearls of José Mourinho this week.
Oh, thank you.
One person called that the best article they'd ever read on The Athletic.
Yeah, I think presumably. And you subscriber, yeah.
No, it's very nice, though. Very nice. Because it was, you know, it's not only analytical, but it was also a replay of the greatest hits of some of José's best bits of being snarky on camera, there which he's very good at, as you point out. Was it the greatest thing I'd ever read on The Athletic, or was it the wonderful thing, Duncan, that you put together with our friend Nick Miller, in which you posit, or which you essentially go after, who is the most successful Premier League player ever by points per game? And the answers may surprise you. Who's the worst, though?
Rüdiger Stead, a man who played with three teams.
Did he?
In the Premier League.
Aston Villa.
Yes. Watford.
Yeah.
Middlesbrough. But, it wasn't very good.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of people might think, why would you rank players by points per game? But
two
I would say,
international
why
break.
Not? And also brackets, international break. Yeah. But
Tamo Pukki is in the bottom 15 of points per game. I was shocked by that.
I wasn't, because he played for Norwich City. So, yeah, he deserved to be down there.
Okay.
But, yeah. Won't spoil who's top, but it's not a Manchester City player, although they do dominate the top 20.
The fact that you didn't expect that presumably makes you the ideal reader of this content.
100%.
Oh, my gosh.
But I've heard of him. Yeah. Rory, have you got anything you'd like to plug?
Not imminently. I'm currently trying to write about Gladiators, to be honest.
Oh, yeah? On what basis?
On the basis that I think they are saving linear TV whilst clad in spandex.
Okay.
That's my current project. It's nothing to do with football, but it's the international break, so that's what happened.
Well, it's got Mark Clattenburg, so there is a...
It does have... I've been trying to get on the radio on another network that I do on a Monday, I've been trying to get them to talk about Mark Lattenberg's refereeing performance on Gladiators as though it's Mark Lattenberg, Premier League referee, giving it the same level of scrutiny.
Right.
But thus far, they have refused to do what I think would be quite a good piece of content.
Is Gladiators really good then?
It hits like a really smart niche, I think, in that it provides parents with nostalgia and children with excitement. But also the numbers are insane. Like they're getting like 9 million viewers, which doesn't happen anymore.
Wow.
And it is a genuine cultural phenomenon.
And you say spandex is the key.
I think if more stuff happened in spandex, people would engage with it. We should do this. If now that we're on YouTube, we should do this in spandex.
I'm way ahead of you, Rory. Right, YouTube viewers? Okay, well, there's lots to talk about today because it is international break. You've got your crucial Euro qualifying playoffs, which actually start this afternoon as we record Thursday. And we'll get onto those shortly. But let's begin with a nice, meaningless, friendly England-Brazil.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
What a save! God thanks!
Now can he take Leandro? John Barnes now. Michael all the way for England. Barnes! Good!
Gary Lineker, the penalty taker, to equal the all-time record.
Ronaldinho, Gilberto Silva e Rivaldo. Ronaldinho Gaúcho cobrou direto pro gol! Gol!
Brasil! It's Wayne Rooney! And England lead in the Maracanã!
England-Brazil! Woo! Just a meaningless friendly, but then half of those golden memories there were from matches that actually didn't really matter. And, yeah, I'm pumped. It's coming up on Saturday. Jack, you're going to be there. Mm. And so will Jordan Henderson and Kobbie Mainoo and loads of other people as well.
All the gang.
All the gang.
Together at last.
All right. I see that the Brazil manager says it's going to be the most exciting day of his life. Will that go for the rest of us, do you think?
I wouldn't bet on it, no. But, I mean, from a Brazil perspective, I think it's more interesting than from an England one. Obviously, this is the new coach's first game. Dorival Júnior, it's his first game as an international manager. And he hasn't got a very long runway ahead of him before the Copa America. I think only three games. They play England, they play Spain next week. And then they've got a friendly plan with the US just before that tournament. And, I mean, you look at the squad and it's kind of a scratch squad. You've got 11 uncapped players, seven more who have got fewer than five caps. So it's very much a kind of, not a vintage Brazil, which I think I've seen some of the early preview pieces in the media saying, like, this isn't the Brazil that you may expect. And, yeah, I think that's reflected in the kind of excitement levels in Brazil itself.
Okay, are you saying they're not excited about it in Brazil?
Well, I think there's a realization that they are in a bad moment, as the phrase goes, kind of a rescue job, really. So Dorival Júnior is someone who is seen as a firefighter throughout his career, someone who can come in, doesn't rub people up the wrong way, isn't particularly wedded to one tactical system, kind of adaptable and low ego, which I think is in his favour. Obviously, Brazil have landed themselves in this ridiculous situation by waiting for Carlo Ancelotti for a year, which I think I said last time I was here, if that doesn't happen, it would just be so embarrassing. And lo and behold, it didn't happen. And so they've essentially wasted a year since the World Cup. And yeah, I think all of that plays into a feeling of pessimism, I would say. I mean, it's not like, I think at the dawn of a new era, there's always a little bit of green shoots of hope, but it's, yeah, this is by no means a side that appears ready to conquer the world.
Okay, Vinicius Junior's in the squad. Any other names among these kind of lesser known talents that we should really watch? Is there one that you think is, oh, this guy's amazing?
Well, I mean, Endrick is the one that everyone will talk about, but I'm a little bit more excited about Savinho, who plays for Girona. Had a fantastic season, can play on either wing. I think he has the potential to be a kind of a long-term option for Brazil. But really, I think actually the most exciting inclusion is not really a new player. It's actually Lucas Paquetá, who is back on the scene. He missed all of the games under Fernando Diniz because Brazil were paranoid about the kind of investigation about betting activity that is still hovering over him. But Dorival visited him in London a couple of weeks ago and convinced him, look, this, we want you back in midfield for us. And I, you know, he's one of my favourite players. He's kind of a rare player in this Brazil setup that can actually create from central areas. Brazil are lacking that somewhat, so I'm quite excited to see him back in the team.
Okay. Rory?
I was going to say, ask Jack when he thinks Brazil will last Brazil. Because there is this sort of tension, isn't there, between what all of us, certainly of our generation, kind of think of when you think of what's England Brazil and you think of the yellow shirts and what Brazil means. And yet it seems that for quite a long time we've been saying, we'll just remember that they're not Brazil. And I just wondered, Jack, who knows it much better than I do, when would you say that Brazil will last worthy of that, like, Brazil
This is Brazil
reputation.
Football club we're talking about.
Football heritage. Well, just firstly, I would just say that kind of tension is very much present in the discourse in Brazil as well. There is kind of a constant to-ing and fro-ing between the, we need to get back to the glorious technicolor football, insert kind of
samba football at the home of football.
Yeah, insert imagery and overblown kind of self-regard here, and then veering back into, we need to, you know, drag ourselves into the modern era. And Chichi, who I think objectively speaking did a fantastic job, was often criticized for not being that kind of free-flowing football, slightly, you know, it wasn't terrible football, I don't think, by any means, but it was stable and it was kind of governed by modern ideas, I think, in a broadly European style. And there has been a bit of blowback against that. So Diniz, who came in and completely flunked it, was kind of seen as bringing back more of a typically Brazilian style in the way that we think of it. But to answer your question, I mean, 2002, maybe even
2006, maybe a bit.
A touch, but that was, I suppose, yeah, that's, you could call that kind of a failed attempt at that, because it was just, I think, yeah, I guess you're right, because so many attackers, maybe not quite the structure that was needed, but at least, well, that brings another point into the debate. Is it only regarded as, you know, the Brazilian style if it ends up being successful?
Mm.
And there is also that in the Brazilian psyche. They like to paint themselves, and we like to paint them as kind of barefooted, off the cuff.
Yeah.
You know,
carnival sex Pelé,
which is, I think, you know, which is largely rubbish, isn't it? But they care about winning more than anyone. They love winning. And that's why, you know, 1994, to be an example, was celebrated, because it was pretty turgid football, but they were winners. So, yeah, there are so many kind of layers to this, but it's been a while, is the short answer.
Has Dorival Jr., has he got the right Murillo?
Yeah, I think that was, frankly. I mean, you can debate whether Murillo of Nottingham Forest should have been called up, and maybe he should, but yeah, that's just
the story that the
fake news, baby.
Right, nice. Excellent. Got any Brazil questions, Duncan?
Well, no, Rory covered it, I think. I mean, obviously, this was the first ever England international at the new Wembley. And
I thought they played Italy and...
That was an under-21 game.
Oh.
But the senior one. And it was a one-all draw with John Terry scoring. It doesn't live long in the memory. But playing left-back for England...
Why wasn't that in the montage?
Well, playing left-back for England for 90 minutes, Nicky Shorey. He won't be involved this weekend.
Indeed not. Who will be for England then? What's the squad headlines?
Well, obviously the interest is in the third midfield berth, and Kobbie Mainoo's being called. The fact he's been called up, I think, is exciting people, because I'm not sure any of the other options really. I don't think anyone wants to see Jordan Henderson in that position, although we may.
Julian Laurens might want to see him there.
Yes, yes, very true. But yeah, I mean, yeah. I think that's probably England's one question mark. And obviously left back being, you know, having injuries, and but going into the tournament, and, you know, in contrast to what Jack was saying about Brazil, I mean, England's squad is very strong in virtually every position. So, yeah, it's, I guess, quite an unusual situation. You know, England going into a game against Brazil as, you know, strong, strong favourites. And, you know, I remember, I think the reason the John Barnes goal is replayed so much is because it was such a shock to, you know, for England in that era to go to the Maracanã and score a goal like that was just baffling. Whereas now, people would nod and move on.
Indeed.
So the bigger surprise in that situation would be that England were playing a friendly in South America rather than a South American team being forced by economic reasons. Happen. Yeah, and to be fair, England-Brazil is one of those international games that does still have a little bit. Obviously, it's a friendly, no one cares, but it is one of those games that still has a little bit of like cachet because it doesn't happen that often. I mean, England haven't played Argentina since that Michael Owen goal.
Well, hang on. No, they played them at the World Cup. They played them in 2002.
Yeah, but they've not played Argentina since. They've not had a friendly, didn't they?
And like, was it in Switzerland?
In Geneva, I think, or Zurich.
Hang on a second.
And Michael Owen scored a last-minute winner.
Mm.
When was that?
Like
2006, 2007.
Oh, did they? Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah, it was. But again, I think this is the point you're making, Rory, is that because it was England and Argentina, it was a friendly, but everyone lost their minds because it was such a good game. And
But also, given how frequently they seem to play the other European countries, and given how much the two big South American nations need to play European countries to make money, it is weird that England and Brazil and England and Argentina don't run into each other.
What you want is often. A kind of like a nation super league, really, a
global nation super league. Hmm. Yeah, that's the dream.
That's the dream. After facing England on Saturday, Brazil are going to be taking on Spain in Madrid, actually. Another tasty-looking fixture. That's being kind of packaged as a special Vinny Jr. Friendship affair, Jack.
Yeah, anti-racism gala special. Yeah, shouldn't really need to do that, should we? But
nope.
There we are.
Okay, as I mentioned, there are teams that are actually fighting for their place at Euro 24 over this international break. And those matches, the semi-finals at least, taking place on Thursday. Today as we record, we'll get onto those next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
It's interesting you called it Euro 24 then. I was talking to Michael Cox the other day and saying, I think this is the first tournament since Euro 96 where you can call it Euro and then just two numbers.
Oh, right, nice.
Right, it's quite a nice moment.
Well, the last one was 22, but it was 20... No, 22, Euro, but it was 21.
Yeah, but you wouldn't say Euro 20, you'd say Euro 20.
It was 20, sorry, yeah, 21, yeah.
I don't know how comfortable I am with Euro 24. I feel like it's Euro 2024.
Okay.
I'm going to...
It's because it feels like you're saying it's the 24th Euros. Whereas with Euro 96, no one thought it was the 96th Euros, did they?
Maybe it is.
I don't know. Yeah. Mm. There's no accounting for people, Duncan.
I think both ways are fine, to be fair. Mm. Anyway, the Euro playoffs for brackets 20, close brackets 24... get underway Thursday afternoon. Essentially, you've got 6 one-legged semi-finals, and the winners go through to 3 one-legged finals, which will be next Tuesday. And whoever wins those three finals will take the last three spots at Euro.
Very
the one
into
coming
Toto
up to
Cup, isn't it? Hmm? Very into Toto Cup, having multiple finals.
I think that's the inspiration. Mm. Yeah. So at 5 o'clock this Thursday, which is probably underway or possibly even over by the time you hear this, listener, it's Georgia-Luxembourg. Woo! The winners of which will face the winners of Greece-Kazakhstan, which is a little bit later on Thursday. Also on Thursday evening, you've got Bosnia-Herzegovina against Ukraine. Winners of that take on whoever comes out of Israel-Iceland. And Poland take on Estonia. And the winners there will face the winners of Wales-Finland. Crikey. Georgia-Luxembourg. Can you name, Rory, or anybody? Can anyone name who is managing Georgia without looking?
I'm just going to annoy
is
me.
Is Zabaleta when, involved?
No, that's Albania. Albania, yeah. With Silvino.
Oh, yeah.
That was another on my list, actually. Yeah.
Go on.
All right. It's the Champions League winning right back, Willy Sagnol.
Oh, that's right.
Willy Sagnol's in charge of Georgia. As you mentioned, Duncan, thank you for that. Albania is currently under the tutelage of the managerial dream team of Paolo Zabaleta and Silvino out of Arsenal.
Mm.
Nice. Greece? You know this.
Gus Poyet.
Yes. How about Bosnia and Herzegovina?
Tumbleweed in the studio.
It is the former Aston Villa striker.
Bosco Balaban.
Julian Jochim.
Savo Milosevic. Savo Milosevic, right? Everybody. If you like that, you're going to love Ukraine's manager. Do you know who Ukraine's manager is?
If it's somehow linked to Savo Milosevic, is it Dion Dublin?
Only in the sense that it's
Ian
another...
Ormondroyd.
Sorry?
No.
It's Ian Ormondroyd is objectively the funniest football name of all time, I would say. It's a mixture of like the sound of Ormondroyd, the era in which he played, the nature of the player he was, and the fact that his first name is Ian.
You don't get many 6'4" wingers anymore.
No, you do not.
Okay. For you, listener, because you're still wondering who is the Ukraine manager, it's Sergei Rebrov. Okay, no one was that excited by that. But I was taken aback by how little I knew of international managers this week, and I wondered if that was a common issue, and apparently it is. But let's move on to Wales. Where do you want to start with this, actually? Do you want to talk about the incredibly exotic-looking Group C of these semi-final stroke finals, where you've got Greece and Kazakhstan and Georgia and Luxembourg? Three of those teams have never been to an international tournament. Greece obviously have and won it. But one of those four teams, Greece, Kazakhstan, Georgia and Luxembourg, is going to be at the Euros this summer. Woo!
And we should also not ignore the fact that Kazakhstan just isn't in Europe.
But that's fair.
It is literally in the middle of Asia.
Mm.
Georgia-Luxembourg is really interesting because obviously Georgia have got not quite a golden generation, but they've got some decent players now. Kvaratskhelia at Napoli is the most famous, but there's Mamardashvili, the Valencia keeper. There's a couple in France, Mitatadze at Metz. I think they've got a winner at Bordeaux, whose name I don't want to try and pronounce. But they look like they have kind of enough top flight-ish players around Europe to be a decent side. And Luxembourg don't, but Luxembourg's rise through the ranks of international football in the last like 10 years has been astonishing. You know, there was a point where they were Andorra, San Marino, Liechtenstein, and they're now kind of quite competitive. They drew with France, didn't they, in qualifying for something. It's already confusing. They are now a pretty good football team, Luxembourg, and that is one of the kind of quieter, like, but most admirable good stories in European football at the moment. And they've benefited actually from the Nations League a lot.
Well, as have Georgia, because Georgia only ever finished bottom or second bottom in European qualifying, European Championship qualifying. That's in their last seven campaigns, every time, either last or next last. They're only here because they've had a couple of good campaigns in the Nations League at the fourth tier and third tier. Georgia also will be facing Luxembourg without Kvaradona because he's suspended for this game. So it's going to be a tight one, that. Anyway, whoever gets through that group will be taking on, checks notes again, Greece against Kazakhstan. Woof. What about the Wales group? Wales up against Finland. The other semi-final in that group is Poland-Estonia. If you're not bothered about Wales against Finland, perhaps you will be after you hear this.
There have been poets and actors and politicians and rock and rollers, but no one and nothing unifies us in the way that you do and make us feel safe to show our pride and our sorrow and our grief and our hopes and dreams. They live in you. And when you play, you're not just playing for the living, you're playing for hundreds and thousands of men that came before me and you.
There you go, Rhys Ifans.
There's 2 million people in Wales.
Do you think there's a law of diminishing returns about that stuff?
Yeah.
Like if you've been inspired by Michael Sheen once, the next time Michael Sheen pitches up, you kind of know what's coming. And then Rhys Ifans comes in and does a decent, you know, solid job, 7 out of 10.
Who'd you get next?
But you're a bit like Alid Jones. I think you've got to go different. You've got to go someone a
if
little
I'm Robbie
bit
Savage,
more
I'm, left field. I've got my hand up.
Farmer Sam?
It's a great shout. It's a great shout. What?
Next? Norman Price.
Yeah, Bella Lasagna should do a job.
Get her in when they play Italy.
So, Wales are up against Finland, and this is Thursday evening, and it's a very serious business because it essentially could see Wales through. Yeah, they have to get through this, and then whoever wins out of Poland and Estonia. You might fancy their chances as well, because Finland are not in a great moment right now. They only managed to scrape past San Marino a couple of months ago. They do have Teemu Pukki, who's now turning out for Minnesota United of MLS. Oh, they've also got the Bayer Leverkusen goalkeeper Lukas Radetzky. And like Wales, they only just missed out on automatic qualifying from their group. Oh, there's also loads of Leeds players on display, Rory. Finland have got Glenn Kamara. Nice. And Wales have got...
Yeah.
Who? Conor Roberts, Joe Roden, Ethan Ampadu and Dan James.
Yeah, I think having more Leeds players in an international team is almost definitely a guarantee of success. We've become a bit inured to the Wales story. Like, there was a long time where Wales didn't get close to qualifying for tournaments, let alone be a bit disappointed when they didn't qualify. I think they've got a decent chance. They probably should beat Finland, especially with home advantage. I would guess it'd be Poland in the final,
right,
which is a different order of challenge. Poland got some quite famous players who are quite good. And they should get past Estonia, who I don't understand why Estonia are in this.
Nations League. Yeah, Nations League. Estonia did all right in the Nations League, whereas in qualifying,
right,
from their 8 qualifying matches, they took 1.1.
That's not a great record, I would say. So Wales got a decent shout of getting through, I think, but Poland will be tough.
Okay. Excellent. Well, that's all happening Thursday night. It may have already happened, listeners, as I say, and it's huge, and the final's coming up on Tuesday. Other games to look out for. Thursday, oh, that's today as well. Crikey, you've got semi-finals of the CONCACAF Nations League. They have a Nations League over in CONCACAF, Jack. USA hosts Jamaica, while Panama face Mexico. In friendlies, although stretching the term a little bit, you've got Russia-Serbia. I was surprised to see Russia playing a game. They haven't had a competitive fixture since November 2021. I imagine it'll be a while until they have another one. But they have been playing friendlies, apparently. I wasn't aware of this, but they're taking on Serbia. And that's happening, not sure, I think Thursday as well. Friday, You've got Hungary v Turkey, the Christmas Classico. You've got, the next day, Saturday, you've got France.
He's gone.
Saturday, you've got France v Germany, which is possibly the biggest of all the international.
The Maginot Line Classico.
Maginot Line Classico. Nah, why bring that up?
Sorry.
Yeah. Taking place in Lyon, it is the first France game in 85 fixtures not to do what?
Griezmann.
Yes. Feature Antoine Griezmann. Yeah. Yeah, he's got that ankle injury. I think it might be the same one that he picked up from the first leg against Inter, the first of that last 16 tie. But yeah, he's going to be out. They say potentially for 6 weeks, which is pretty huge news for Atletico, who got beaten, you recall, last weekend 3-0 by Barcelona without him, and have Borussia Dortmund coming up in not long, about 3 weeks' time. All righty. Germany will be without Manuel Neuer, which is not necessarily the biggest of issues because they've got plenty of goalkeeping talent, has the Mannschaft. He's got a muscle strain and is in doubt, apparently, for the Arsenal game in 3 weeks' time. But beyond all of that, though, if we get excited about England playing Brazil, do we get excited about France-Germany?
I mean, I don't.
Okay, Jack.
I apologise. I mean, it's just what Rory said, that this seems to be so much less of a rarity. And, yeah, I mean, while Brazil or Argentina or any South American team arranging one of these fixtures, they're desperate to play all these games, you know, they will put more of stock in it. I don't think this will be, you know, obviously teams preparing for the Euros, but
yeah,
it's a bit of a shrug, isn't it?
The last meeting of these two teams was in a friendly, and it was only about 6-7 months ago. And Germany beat France then. That was when they had Rudi Völler in interim charge after Hansi Flick left. Julian Nagelsmann has come in. He won his first game against the United States, but since then drew with Mexico and has had back-to-back defeats against Turkey and Austria. So possibly a little bit of, you know, potential disaster there for Germany, if that's your bag.
There's a real sort of sense of fear, I think, in Germany now that the Euros is kind of going to be a bit of a humiliation. It's really strange. You can look at kind of the fact that that great industrialised youth system has stopped churning out the sorts of players that it did maybe, 10, 15 years ago. But they're much worse than they should be, Germany, and they don't seem to be able to make it any better.
Maybe France are going to make it worse then on Saturday. Germany, after they take on France, will be facing the Netherlands. That's on Tuesday. Netherlands, they're taking on Scotland on Friday. Ronald Koeman, that's right, listener, Ronald Koeman has won 5 of his last 6 with the Netherlands. Scotland, you recall, have done brilliantly in Euro qualifying, but they tailed off a little bit of late. They haven't won in their last 5.
Will it be the first time Denzel Dumfries faces Scotland?
Mm. Ooh, nice.
It's huge.
Nice. San Marino were going for their first win in 20 years Wednesday night. They took on St. Kitts and Nevis, who are a Caribbean outfit. San Marino, who have been dubbed the world's worst national football team because of their losing percentage, which is...
They're on a bad run.
They are on a bad run.
In a bad moment.
Actually, you know what? They're on a little bit of a bounce because they've scored goals now in 4 consecutive matches for the first time in their history, one of which came against St. Kitts and Nevis on Wednesday night. Did they win? No, they lost 3-1. But still, they did take the lead. And they play again on Sunday. So that's nice. St. Kitts and Nevis, if you're not familiar with them, they are currently ranked 147th in the world, which is 63 places against the 210th ranked San Marino.
Who are San Marino's manager, James?
Oh, I don't know.
Nor do I. I just thought I'd give you some of your own medicine. Yeah.
I don't know.
That must be a pretty good job, being manager of San Marino.
Yeah.
Like, you know, do we need to win? Once every 25 years.
I can tell you that Austin Huggins is in charge of St. Kitts and Nevis.
Thank you, Rory.
The manager of San Marino is Roberto Civoli. He's only got a 1-line or 2-line Wikipedia entry. He mainly operated as a defender. He's from Romagna in Italy, but he's a naturalised San Marino citizen.
That's nice.
By contrast, Austin Huggins,
St. Kitts and Nevis manager
from Basse-Terre, St. Kitts and Nevis, has not only like an intro on his Wikipedia, but he's got all of his appearance things, club career, international career, managerial career, career statistics, references. He's no wonder St. Kitts and Nevis won. Wikipedia-wise, he is far ahead of his rival.
All right, do they have more Leeds players as well, Rory?
No, but he spent a lot of his playing career with Garden Hotspurs.
Okay.
Who I imagine are a subsidiary of Tottenham.
You'd hope. It's Nevis, is it not Nevis?
I think it's Nevis.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Very good. Sounds like we've reached the end of our international break news. So, Jack, let's move on.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Oh, more international news. Injuries, Jack. Antoine Griezmann is out for France, we know that. Emmanuel Neuer as well. Thibaut Courtois is not only going to be absent for Belgium when they take on England next week, but also apparently he's going to be not there for the Euros neither because he's been coming back from an ACL tear, ACL injury rather, and he got a tear on his other knee now. So he picked that up in training with Real Madrid. What a shame. Women's Champions League this midweek, quarterfinals, their first legs. Lots of away wins. I mean, in fact, they were all away wins. Chelsea, notably, went all the way to Amsterdam to face Ajax and won 3-0. So very much one foot in the semi-final and not on a slippery doormat on a tiled floor that's been covered in water or anything like that.
The first goal was like something from a textbook about playing to the whistle. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, all the Ajax players stopped. Lauren James kind of just walked through in slow motion and poked it in the net. Not offside, apparently.
Brilliant. Elsewhere, Paris Saint-Germain went to Häcken in Sweden and won 2-1. Where is Häcken, Rory?
It's I don't know if it's an area of Gothenburg, but they play in Gothenburg. They're from Gothenburg.
All right. How do you pronounce Gothenburg?
There was a stage... Well, I pronounce it Gothenburg. There was a stage, I'm sure, when IFK Gothenburg were in the Champions League many moons ago, when one commentator used to always say Göteborg, which apparently is the Swedish pronunciation, although I can't vouch for that.
It's a very beautiful way of saying.
Pretty, isn't
Gothenburg.
It?
Lyon were 2-1 winners at Benfica and Barcelona were 2-1 winners at Brann. Where are they from, Duncan?
From the port city of Bergen in Norway.
Mm. Are they? Mm. Nice. Are they good in the box, Brann?
Yeah.
Are they serial winners?
I see.
When they're playing well, oh, this game, it's all Brann at the moment. Definitely keep this edit.
All right. Okay. Another big football news. Well, one major story we're getting to in a second. But well done, Richard Hughes. Lovely to see our old friend confirmed as the new sporting director of Liverpool. Testament to the fine work he's done at Bournemouth in recruitment of both their playing and also managerial staff, because Andoni Iraola was very much his big idea. And I imagine, is this right, that he will now be taking the reins on Liverpool's search for the Jurgen Klopp successor? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not quite sure how complex a process that necessarily needs to be if they find out that their first choice wants to leave his current team. I think you don't have to crunch a load of numbers to work out who Liverpool's first choice is, whether Richard Hughes is leading the process or not. I think it's very unlikely that Richard Hughes will turn up and say, that guy who's got Bayer Leverkusen unbeaten yeah. all season and 10 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga, not sure about him. I think that's relatively unlikely.
But
if Alonso goes to Bayern or doesn't want to leave Leverkusen, then yeah, he will have a greater say. But I think suggesting that he's going to come in and like Liverpool are only just going to start thinking about people now is not correct.
All right, Rory, I feel very silly now. Sorry. Let's move on to this week in PSR roulette. Confirmation came on Monday that Nottingham Forest are now being deducted 4 points for breaching the profit and sustainability rules. That plunges Nuno Espirito Santo's side into the bottom three, 1 point below Luton, who are now above the dotted line. It is the third PSR-based change to the table. We saw Everton deducted 10 points and given four of those back. And we may well have a fourth one next week because there's a new set of breaches, I think, that the Toffees are in the dock for, which could see a further points deduction. Crikey. Forest also can appeal this four-point penalty, although reaction from, I mean, anecdotal evidence suggests that the Forest reaction is, it's a fair cop, Gov.
Not quite.
Oh.
They were very helpful during the process, which got them a two-point bonus back. But then they've since come out with quite an angry statement. So it sounds like they're going to appeal.
Oh, really? Okay.
So whether that's going to be successful or not. I mean, in the history of the English top flight before this season, there'd only been 17 points deducted ever. We're on 10. We're back up to 10 now. So probably not going to reach 17 this season. But it is does put into context, you know, just how asterisky this season could be.
Very much so. What's the prognosis for Everton's second case then?
I think it could kind of be a mixture of anything really. There's some talk that there might not be any. It could be two, it could be four, it could be six.
We just don't know.
It's a crazy roller coaster of deductions.
It certainly is. Does anybody got anything they want to say about PSR?
I mean, the only irony would be our friends Luton, who may well stay up because of all these shenanigans. Obviously, got a 30-point deduction in League Two, which sent them down to non-league. So there is a sort of sweet irony that they might stay up in the Premier League because of, you know, they are the poster child of points deductions, really. So, yeah, there's that.
Look up points deduction in the dictionary.
Luton Town FC.
Rory.
It feels to me a little bit like, and I wondered with the Forest one whether they might be getting closer to this. It feels like you need to have a written down, like, what's the word?
Guideline, like, framework?
Constitutional thing of this is like the sanction for breaching in this way. So the independent panel for Forest, who are different to the independent panel for Everton, said that they considered both to be severe breaches of PSR. So even though the figures are different and the figures that they were allowed to lose were different, they said, look, they've both gone over by enough that we can consider them a severe breach. And I think that kind of makes sense. You can say if you lose between an extra 1 and 15 million, it's a minor breach, and 15 to 35 million, it's a severe, and 35 plus is something else. But it does feel as though you need to have like a thing that says if you breach severely, you lose this number of points. And if you breach in a minor way, you lose this number of points. I think that one of the problems, this is a bigger subject that A is quite dry, but also I can be very boring on. But one of the problems is it does feel a bit like all these independent panels, because they are separate, are not necessarily working to the same set of guidelines and rules. And that is inherently, I think Forest have been hard done to, but should have been punished. Just ultimately a lot of their case rests on selling Brennan Johnson later on because they wanted to maximise profit. That's fine. Maybe don't sign the other 29 players. Like, no one is defending the way that Forest approached that. Forest wasted a load of money.
Right.
And that's what these rules are designed to stop teams doing. Everton, I think, deserve to be punished as they also broached the rules that they signed up to. And people say, oh, it's a cartel. It supports the cartel. All 20 clubs signed up to these rules. They all know what the rules are. And if they break them, they break them. That's just the deal. But I do think it doesn't help that it feels as though you could, like, it depends a bit on the panel that you get.
It's like a mystery box.
That shouldn't really be the case.
Like community chest or something. You turn over the card and, you know, you've won a beauty contest. Oh, no, you've lost 6 points.
Two questions, you know,
if you get a player sent off
for
a straight red card, it's a three-match ban. It's the equivalent of saying, well, it could be a one-match ban or it might be 10. We just don't know. It depends who's in charge of,
that
you know,
fun.
PGMO all that day. That would be fun. Not sure people would like it.
Two questions for you, Rory. One, are severe breaches what the Amish wear?
Their goals conceded in the Sanchez-Pizjuan.
Oh, nice. And secondly, if Forest appeal, how big a risk is it that they might actually be deemed to be not being quite as compliant as they were before and thus get a bigger penalty?
The FA and various football's various disciplinary bodies do like that, don't they? They do like the kind of...
frivolous. If you're a good,
The frivolous appeal kind of punishment. Don't waste our time. It's far too valuable. Mm. I think the bigger issue is that if they do appeal, it could drag on beyond the end of the season. I think the final deadline is the Thursday after the season finishes, and then the final deadline is June the 8th. So right. it
Which
might be the case that we...
shortly before the fixtures come out, so that's obviously... Yeah,
that's not helpful. So it might be that we don't actually know who's relegated until well after the end of the season, and presumably Everton, who's second here and starts this week, I think.
If you're Burnley watching this and you're seeing Forest dropping into the bottom three, Everton prospectively, who are 4 points clear at the moment, also being into the picture, you begin to think, hang on...
Let's start defending. I mean, I agree with Rory's point that it is very confusing, but I also think that's kind of good as well, because if it is standardised, it kind of turns into FPL. Like, you take a 4-point hit and you think, oh, I'm going to rejig the squad and that's going to get us those points back. So right, I think it almost needs to
How
be...
How often does it work out, taking a 4-point hit?
Not very often, though. But, you know.
Yeah. I hear you. Well, that's how it stands then, and... probably more news on that front with the Everton hearing next week, we understand. As for today's podcast, though, I think, Rory, unless Duncan, Jack, and there's anything else you wanted to add, we'll probably leave it there and look forward to our next one, which is going to be on Sunday. What a show that's going to be, rounding up all of that friendly activity. And, of course, looking ahead to the finals, the three finals of the Euro 2024 playoffs, and loads of other fun as well. Revise your international managers, listener, and join us for that on Sunday / Monday morning. Many thanks for your participation today, Rory Smith, Duncan, Jack, Charlie, and Liam in the booth, and you, listener. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.